Hey Potters, welcome to episode 317 of Cosplot, the podcast for all things cosplay.
Yay!
Happy July, everybody!
Ew!
I mean, to be fair, I am reliably told there are still conventions going on right now for people to cosplay, so hopefully there are people at least off having fun in the depths of, I would say, either summer or winter, depending on where on the globe you are. But there are opportunities, at least. So, I do not have updates to show this time, and it's mostly because I spent a lot of time researching a couple of things for the podcast. I did actually order the Jacquard paint that I would need to paint the borders of my Jedi costume.
Yay.
The problem was that it immediately got canceled.
Oh!
And I didn't find out until long afterward. So I had waited a week for this to arrive at my doorstep. And then I finally saw the notification that it had been canceled. And it was just like, man, now I have to reorder all my Jacquard paint, and they only had one left in stock.
Well, that's rude.
Which is so unfortunate, because they may not even have it in stock anymore at this point. And I need that Jacquard paint to do my tabard. Because, of course, you all saw the four-way stretch fabric that I had that is totally inappropriate for doing borders of any kind. Especially because it's not stiff whatsoever, and this needs to be slightly stiff, almost like bias tape, basically. And so I have to reorder it, which means I have to wait for it again to arrive at my doorstep. So I have the fabric. It's just not painted and not assembled because it's not painted. I have to paint it first and then assemble it. And so thus, unfortunately, I don't really have any progress for you. I did manage to go to Michael's to check in. I'd actually gone for a different reason, but just a glance at their fabric supply to see what they have in store as options for the tunic, as well as the cloak that I will eventually make, but not this time. And I was unimpressed.
Yeah, it's going to...
I'm sorry, Michael.
It's a hard ticket with them, because the way Michael's stores are designed and their mindset for so long, they're not fabric stores. They're just not. What you're going to get is the tiniest of tiniest selections possible. It's mostly going to be quilter's cotton, which nothing wrong with that. That's fine.
Right.
It's just not what they're known for. And they're having to pick up all this excess stock and inventory to take over what Joanne used to be. And it's like, it's just not going to work. Right. It's fine for an online space, but the in-store experience is never going to quite live up to it.
Yeah, they didn't have a lot of garment fabrics, which is more of what I was hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
And like you mentioned, there's a lot of cotton, there's a lot of poly cotton, polyester blends, that sort of thing.
Yep.
Which is fine, just it's not what I'm looking for. It doesn't have the drape I'm looking for. Not to mention that poly cotton is dreadful in the summertime, or at least at any sort of hot temperatures. Realistically, you want organic material like cottons, like silk, like wool. You want those sorts of things, generally speaking, because they regulate temperature better. And so I'm going to have to figure out what I want to do for the tunic portion. Do I want to just cheap out for this year and basically polycotton it for 1 year and then redo it? Or do I want to hope that I get my fabric in time if I order it online to be able to stitch it together, test the fit, and basically assemble everything before the con, which is in, looking at the calendar, roughly 6 weeks and a couple days. So that, it's not a lot of time to make a decision. So
you'll have
that's
to make
basically
one.
My update.
Yeah, you'll have to make a decision sooner or later. And it's like, well, there's no point going to Michael's. Just go to a better online store for more fabric options.
Right. And I found that even if you pay for expedited shipping, it's not always expedited shipping. So you can pay to get it like overnight or even next day.
Mm.
And then it arrives 3 to 5 days later.
There's
sometimes
processing time. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm a little leery of ordering online. I'm kind of tempted just to take the poly route for 1 year. And then as soon as I'm with the con, go ahead and order the fabric. Or I could just order it now. And then that way, if it arrives in time, great. And if it doesn't, well, then I just sew it again for the next time and improve upon it,
There you
and then just
go.
reuse polycotton for something else. Recycle.
I can promise you, somebody who orders online a lot for their fabrics as of pretty much 2020, they're a lot better than they used to be. I promise. You're not going to wait
Yes.
5 months for your fabric, maybe a week at most.
No. Right.
And that's even with the cheapest shipping option, because I will never pay for overnight shipping. That is way too expensive.
Oh no. If I wait long enough that I need something overnight, I will just use whatever I can get
Yeah,
locally with my
exactly.
hands on. At that point,
Exactly.
I couldn't trust overnight shipping. No offense to the Postal Service. I love the Postal Service. Just sometimes extenuating circumstances happen.
Right.
And this costume is not urgent. It may end up being that I go to the con in casual clothes and not in cosplay at all, just to enjoy it. Don't know. Haven't really made a decision yet. It also depends on the weather that day, because if it's 95 degrees outside, I may not be able to wear my cosplay comfortably.
Who
We'll see.
knows? Question mark.
All right. So I believe that is the end of our update. Shall we move into today's topic?
Yes, we are going to talk about how fan conventions have changed and the evolution of FanCon since 2020. And this is something that we've kind of danced around previously. We've briefly touched on it a little bit here and there in other episodes, but we felt like because the fan experience at conventions has really adjusted like so much since the COVID-19 pandemic, we thought it might be a good way to kind of look back and see what has evolved over the years and what has also de-evolved, because there have been some good things that have changed since 2020, but there have also been some negative things that have happened since 2020. Not all changes have been good, not all changes have been bad. There's been a nice little in between. We'll do our best to cover as much as we can because there are a lot of different areas of fan conventions. Obviously, our specialty is more on the cosplay side of things, but we will touch on other stuff. But we're likely going to miss some things, so make sure you continue the discussion on social media and in the YouTube comments, because we'd love to get your opinions on this topic. And to start with, let's talk about how registration and badges have changed, because I think that's a pretty big hot button one that's a sore spot for many people. LineCon has become synonymous with badge pickup, and I think it's gotten much worse over the years in some places. But what's funny is I think some cons have gotten better about this too.
I think part of it boils down to the in-person experience versus if you can get your badges mailed or at will
Yes.
call.
Yes.
Because LineCon is usually if you get it in person, whether you pre-registered online and then they make you pick it up in person, or if you register there at the door, right? And so they're very different experiences.
Yes.
Registration on-site tends to take a lot longer,
Way
because you
longer.
have to give them your information there on the spot and then do payment and all of that other fun stuff. And some places are actually no longer pre-printing badges. Some of them print them on the spot. And that takes time too for it to go through a badge printer if you actually like physically make it on the spot, I mean. And just the sheer number of people, I think, also kind of impacts that experience, because I not so fondly remember LineCon at Project Akon, where you actually had the line snaking around itself in the convention center to where you literally could not get through the hallway because there were so many people packed in there and they didn't want to lose their space in line.
Yeah, it definitely would say that the mailing of badges or even just wristbands, since so many cons are now moving to the wristband system, I think that's a lot more common now, which is great. Makes it so much easier than having to deal with the pickup situation or the registration situation. I don't know. It seems like to me cons are getting more crowded, to be honest. Everyone that I've been to so far in the last few years, it's gotten way, way busier. And I think it's because of the pandemic. More people found anime, found comic books, found video games, and are now like, oh, there are places where people get together to talk about and share these things. So we're getting a whole new group of younger people, newer people entering these spaces, which is awesome, but it also means there's a lot more crowding happening, unfortunately. If it's a smaller convention and a newer convention, tends to be a lot more mitigated, not so much a crowding situation, but if it's a long, well-established convention, oh God, yeah, it's wall-to-wall busyness, craziness up the wazoo. When it comes to registration, I've noticed that more cons are definitely going the technology route. So it's less pen and paper to do your registration. It's more sign up online, or they give you like an iPad, you type up your information, and then you scan a QR code. And I think there's pros and cons to that, because I will say, as much as I despise the QR code because my QR code always breaks, it is faster. I have always had a faster experience with the QR code. But if the technology does not work, or if the Wi-Fi goes down, that completely stalls your entire system, and then you get extenuating line con. So it's like a, you know, it's a give and take. You always have to be ready for a backup for when the technology inevitably fails. And I don't think most
Right.
cons are ready for that to happen. I think they rely too much on the technology that they're not going to know what to do when it fails. So you got to be prepared for the eventuality, unfortunately.
Yeah, I remember last year when we went to a con together, and they had the QR code to get into the con, and they had trouble scanning my QR code. They had a lot of trouble
They
scanning
had
my QR
trouble.
code, even though it was right there on my phone. And it's like, there's only so much I can do to fix that because I can't change the QR code, and I obviously they can't change their scanner. So having the ability to do it on paper instead of having to do the phone if the phone fails for whatever reason would have been helpful.
I've found that if you print it out on a piece of paper, 9 times out of 10, it seems to work. Whereas with your phone,
Awesome.
because everybody has different phone settings, different backgrounds, it can really mess up the computer. If you just have it printed out, ready to go, it's annoying to carry around a piece of paper. I get this. And also, like, I don't want to waste paper, but at least it'll scan. That's the important thing.
Right. Plus, if for whatever reason yours doesn't work and they ask you to bring it up via your email,
Oh
if you don't
gosh.
have internet for whatever reason, or if the convention center, like many convention centers, has abysmal reception,
Reception, yeah.
then you may not be able to get access to that other copy without getting out of line, walking outside, doing the thing, and then having to get all the way back in line, in which case we're back to LineCon. So I don't really like having to give up all that information to
Yes.
register for a con. It's like,
Yeah.
do you really need all this information about me? Realistically, all you should need is just my name, whether that's my real name or whatever name I want on my badge,
Right.
and then maybe an email address for the confirmation. And that's really
That's really
it.
it. Yeah.
Unless
Unless,
you're mailing the badge, in which
yeah.
case, obviously, you need an address. But other
Sure.
than that, nope.
It's the unfortunate reality of the technical world that we live in, where your data is super valuable. And so they want to extract as much data out of you as possible, which really makes me uncomfortable. And I try to avoid those events as much as I can. But because so many fan conventions have gone down that route because they know they can sell your information, you know.
Next topic, since
Yeah.
we literally opened the bag.
The rules and security section, which I think this is a hit or a miss because I've personally found that conventions have become very relaxed about bag checks. Or they'll do an initial check, but then they'll ignore follow-up bag checks. And it makes me incredibly uneasy going to conventions now because they've become more lax.
This assumes they do bag checks at all. Some
Yeah,
conventions don't do
don't.
any.
Which is wild given the world that we live in. It's like you need to do at least a basic bag check.
I'm a little surprised they haven't gone the routes of stadiums for sports events, concerts, that sort of thing, where it says you can only have a backpack of a certain size, kind
Size.
of like when you go through the airport, and that it has to be a clear backpack so that you can see into it and that security has the right to open it up if, you know, they see something that merits additional looking. But I'm a little surprised they haven't gone that route instead of doing what I've seen for conventions that do it, which is the manual bag check, which is just they go through everybody's bag and there are no limits on the kind of bag that you can bring. So.
And I wonder if that's because fan conventions just have a different flavor and vibe, that we're the type of group that is more likely to have the big bulky bags because we want a place to carry our merch instead of having a bunch of things to handle around. Like, we're the ones that are going to have like the poster tubes and the multi-purpose backpack so we can have a bunch
Or you
of.
have to go back and forth
Yeah, yeah,
to like
yeah.
carry your merch.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's just because of the. the environment, that's just the kind of baggage that we carry. So it's okay to have the bigger backpacks. I've seen like one or two really, really, really big cons try to do the small clear bag thing, but they always get right. screamed at for it because it's like, where are we supposed to put our drinks? Where are we supposed to put our makeup? Where are we supposed to put our car keys? Because we can't fit them in this tiny little bag. So I get it.
Of course.
So it's a tough one. It's a tough one. I think my concern is more of the conventions who are just not doing bag check at all. Like, those are the ones that make me go, what are you thinking?
Now, along the same sort of lines, prop weapon checks.
Yeah.
Some cons have gotten more strict about what they allow in the con.
Uh-huh.
Some cons have gotten much more lax.
Lax, yeah.
And will allow pretty much anything so long as it's not, you know, metal.
It's wild.
And I don't know from experience. I just genuinely haven't had experience with it, but I don't know how well they enforce having everyone go through security, because normally a lot of places will do like zip ties
mm-hmm.
to prove that you have gone through security and done the whole check
yep.
thing. But it's not like you can't go and just buy a random set of rainbow zip ties at the store and then stick one on there. So, or some people just don't go through the check at all
mm-hmm.
and they just wander through the con with whatever their prop is.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that I can really say it's changed all that much, because it's gotten both better
and
worse. So kind of on average, we meet in the middle. And so it's like, well, on balance, I guess it hasn't really changed that much since it went in both directions at the same time.
I kind of agree with that one too, because it's just like it equals out, because it really hasn't changed much. It depends on the event that you go to. Some are more strict and some are more relaxed.
I have noticed, just as cosplayers, that prop weapons have become a lot more realistic.
Yeah.
And you have to be doubly sure that you have like the orange cap or the bright colors or whatever the con requires, so that you absolutely know that this is fake. This is not real, because you do not want to confuse the security people that they usually have at cons. Like, you don't want there to be any question that this is a prop.
And it's interesting, because I have seen some of the larger conventions put a hard no on those kind of weapons. Anything that could be realistically considered right. something in that exists in this world, it's like, no, you can no longer bring it. You can no longer have the orange tip. It's just not allowed, period, which I'm on board with, because we don't want to cause any extra confusion or concern amongst people. But then there are newer cons who are like, oh, yeah, any type of fake prop weapon is fine. It's just like, ah, it's so confusing at times.
As far as other rules go,
yeah.
I don't think there's been a lot of change.
I actually think they kind of gotten worse in some places.
That's fair.
Yeah. Because we've had a lot more newer conventions crop up that have taken the place of older conventions. Unfortunately, COVID has kind of killed a couple of conventions. Rules and regulations have been really bare bones. It's like cosplay is consent, but then they leave it at that. They don't give any information about where do people go to report someone? What if they need to report a staff member? What if they don't want to go talk to a police officer because of previous experiences? You know, there's a lot of those longstanding issues with fan conventions that I don't feel have improved. And that's one area where I feel like we're getting worse, is we're not having clear-cut direct guidelines of what are the rules of the con. Don't leave them generic. Give us specifics, give us details, because we need clear policies, especially harassment policies. That's the bare minimum. Make the policies clear and easy to understand. And if your local convention doesn't have clear policies, let them know how important it is, because it is a very, 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 very big deal.
For the rules not changing, I think it's because I haven't seen any like new rules added to it. Like, pretty much all the rule sets that all the conventions have are pretty identical across the board and have been for forever. Like, you have to have a badge everywhere. Don't leave your trash everywhere. No outside food or drink. Leave the other attendees alone. You can have your photo taken if you're in public space anywhere. Like,
mm-hmm.
those rules are pretty consistent across the board, and I haven't seen any change in any of those.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, could we use some clarifications?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah. Speaking of clarifications, shall we move into accessibility?
Yes.
This is where I put signs, and that's why I asked.
Signs. We love signs. Please, signs. Praise the signs, especially since we've moved to this very digital app-only experience. Not having a clue
Yes.
where to go because there's no longer maps out on the floor or hard copies of any of the schedules. Signs are key. Please give us signs. Thank you.
We need to know where stuff is if we're not familiar with that hotel. So if you say it's in the grape room, well, unless the grape room has a giant sign in front of it saying grape room, I'm not going to know where that is. And those giant digital maps that they have in hotels that say you are here. Well, sometimes it's really hard to find out where you are here is for
Yeah,
the
especially if it's your
person.
first time.
Yes. And even then, the little blinky dot doesn't necessarily tell you how to get to Sesame Street. No, the grape room, the room for your panel, because it may not even be on the same floor as you. And usually those digital maps are only of that floor that you're currently on. Doesn't have the maps of the other places. So while I can appreciate conventions having really detailed apps, having really detailed digital communications and such, and websites and all the like, sometimes you just need a paper copy. Especially for those apps which require you to be online, or say websites that require you to be online at the con. Again, some people may not have access to the internet for whatever reason, or the reception in the convention center may be just so bad that you can't pull up the app or the website to get the map, in which case you're kind of reliant on whatever's inside the hotel.
My favorite is when the hotel is bought out by another business, so they change the names of the rooms, but so they've already like the convention's already made the map and it's like, cool, that's great. But then the names of the rooms change and they never update it. And I'm not talking about like, oh, the change happened a week ago. Change happened like several months in advance. So it's like, so now instead of looking for the Emerald Room, I'm looking for the Eisenhower Room. I have no clue where these places are. This happened to me at a convention last year, and I felt like every hour I was having to ask a staff member, where is this room? Because I couldn't find it, and I felt so bad. I hate when that happens, and I always feel bad for the con, but also as the convention, you need to be a little bit more prepared than that and be like, oh, the room's had a name change. We need to update our contact to reflect that there's been a name change.
Right. And
Oh
if
my
you're
gosh.
going to use manual signs are great. Just please don't handwrite them on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper.
No one's going to see them.
Even if it's with a broad Sharpie, you still can't read it from far away. And likewise, even a poster board size sign may not be enough, especially if you want people to be able to see it down the hall. You need like person height signs. Very, very tall signs with very large, easy to read text, so that you can see it from wherever it is you need to see it from. And please make sure that it's outside the room, not sitting just inside the door where nobody can see it until you're right up on top of it.
I don't understand that.
Outside, please.
Outside, please. And make sure if your only option is to handwrite, get the person with the nicest handwriting to do it, please and thank you.
Make sure that all of your major areas are labeled, not just the panel rooms. So
Yes.
things like registration, medical, food court, that sort of thing. Label everything. Please don't assume that somebody knows where something is. That's all.
So for other accessibility things, just in general, it feels like accessibility mindset has maybe gone a couple of steps backwards from what I've experienced lately. There's been fewer chairs and tables available, a lot more required standing around, which is not comfortable for anybody, especially on those lovely concrete floors. Few to no ADA lines. The event that we went to last year, I was shocked that there were no ADA lines. That still flabbergasted me and was completely wrong. Forcing people to stand on ramps or standing outside for long periods of time without any assistance. Much smaller walkways with vendors. I think that one's been the biggest thing a lot of people have noticed
Yes.
over the years as of late is they're cramming so many vendors into such a small area that the walkways between the tables is tight, tight, tight. And vendors complain about this too, saying people can't stop to look at our wares. They're just trying to get through because it's so crowded and cramped. So they're losing money on top of it too. And while it's technically wide enough for the fire marshal, it's not wide enough as a human being. People with wheelchair needs or any type of mobile assistance, like they can't get through that space. And if they can't get through that space, a person who doesn't need mobility assistance can't get through that space. It's as simple as that.
Also, please make sure that those spaces are accessible solely by stairs. So if you have to use stairs to get into a room for whatever reason,
Which is
that's not
wild.
accessible.
It's not accessible.
If you're limited to stairs and escalator, still not accessible. You can't take a wheelchair onto an escalator easily. You need to have everything have ramps or elevator accessible or a lift or whatever it is that you need so that everybody not only has enough space, but can even get in the room to begin with.
Yeah, something that we have preached over and over again is if you bake accessibility into the beginnings of your convention plan, then everybody benefits. It's really as simple as that. Make everything accessible and everybody will be happy.
And that goes for websites and apps too.
Oh, 100%.
Please consult standards on that sort of thing just to make sure that everybody can equally use your digital services as well as your physical ones.
All right. Let's talk about guests at conventions.
So many guests.
There's so
It's
many
a little time.
guests.
Honestly, I don't want to speak about the quality of the guests because I don't necessarily want to try and pass judgment on people and whether or not they are worthy, because that's up to the attendees and to the con itself. But it feels like a lot of cons have drastically shrank the number of guests that they have overall speaking. And that, unfortunately for cosplay, there are much, or I guess I should say, many fewer cosplay guests. You might get two or three for the smaller cons if you're lucky, even for some of the bigger cons, really.
Yeah, if even.
But the bulk of the guests nowadays seem to be one domestic, at least here in the States. In other words, the guests are from here in the States. And two, they tend to be either voice actors or tied to industry in some way. So directors, animators, etc. People who work on anime, in other words. There aren't as many guests of, say, the musical persuasion, or like I mentioned, the cosplay persuasion, or even artist guests, like the makers who do things, who draw the things, who sculpt the things. And so it's just a different variety and a different proportion of the guests, is what I've noticed.
Yeah, when it comes to the cosplay side of things, the one thing I've noticed is there's definitely a lack of diversity. I remember very clearly in the 2010s, there was a big push for people of color and more men to be guests. And I'm not seeing them as often now. It seems to be kind of the usual group of guests or the specific type of look, and it doesn't really represent cosplay as a whole because cosplay is a hobby that is literally anybody can do it. And it sucks that we've have removed some of that diversity in favor of social media consumption. Guests as a whole, it's really hard to say because of where I live and we're a really big dubbing state. We get a lot of the same guests all the time everywhere for anime conventions, and it's no shame to them and no shade on them whatsoever. It's just we would like a little bit more variety. I understand you got to pay your bills. Good for you. We would just like to have a little bit more variety. When it comes to the bigger events like Fan Expo contracts out to specific entertainment groups, and you tend to see the same type of guests at Fan Expo, and they just kind of make pit stops around the country with Fan Expo. And as that entity continues to buy up more conventions, I think we're just going to continue to see the same thing.
Yeah, something else briefly is the cost, not of having the guests, but of attendees being able to see the guests, to interact with the guests, to get things signed from them, to have face-to-face conversations. Some places are actually starting to lock a lot more of that behind a paywall. And not only is it a paywall, That paywall is skyrocketing. You used to be able to pay a nominal fee to get something signed by a voice actor, by a celebrity, by whoever your guest is. And nowadays, not only will they only sign very specific things, and only those specific things, but if you don't have one of those specific things, they of course offer some samples of said specific things for sale for sometimes quite high prices. And then you can't take free photographs with them anymore, so no selfies with cell phones. You have to pay to do that. And there is no interaction time with any of the celebrities. Basically, it's almost like a cattle call. You're in, they rush you through whatever you're doing, whether it's the signature, whether it's the picture, and then they rush you off as fast as possible so they can churn through people. And I'm not saying that any of this is the celebrities or the guests doing.
Yeah, no.
Sometimes it's the cons doing, sometimes it's the agencies doing, but it tends to make for a much less fulfilling experience for the attendees. Not to mention when you're starting to have to pay $80 to $400 for a single picture or a single autograph, it starts to price you out of the con. Not just of that interaction, but the con itself, because you have to account for that in the price. And so
It's a
at some
lot.
point, I wish they'd take a second look at this and maybe go, maybe we don't need to charge $400 for an autograph for this. Maybe 300 is okay. Even 300 is a lot.
300 is a lot. Yeah. And it's part of this give and take, push and pull with the celebrities that they get as guests at these events. Because some of these celebrities are like, I'm not going to do it unless it's this, this, and this. So, I mean, I know it's. Want things to be more affordable for everybody, but that they want to get like the B A-list celebrities to come to our conventions. Like, heck, Sam Raimi, legendary director Sam Raimi is going to be at Fan Expo Dallas. I know his autographs aren't going to be expensive because it's Sam Raimi. I get it. But it also hits a point of where do people stop attending because they simply can't afford to attend? You've priced everybody out of the experience. There is an upper limit to this. It would be nice if conventions got to a model where, because the badge slash ticket price is so expensive already, if that included one autograph or like one meet and greet, like that would be nice. And then anything extra that you want to pay for, you can cover it. Cool. I'm just throwing that idea out there. Is it feasible? Probably not, but hey, I'm just saying. It's definitely a different system than what we were used to. It's something that I mentioned in chat where once upon a time, especially for anime conventions, signatures were included with your badge price. They were free. You could go walk up to any of the voice actors at any time as they're roaming the con and they were chill to talk to. They would take a picture with you. They never charged for it. But as the market changed, and as eBay became very, very popular, they realized, oh, we should probably make a little bit of money off of this because other people are making money off of our signatures. And it kind of snowballed from there. So I get it. The voice actors, actors, artists, everybody needs to get paid 100%. I'm down with that. But we got to figure out a balance where it's not causing people to go into extreme debt just to get that one autograph from your favorite actor.
Kind of segue this lightly into our next topic. Badges also used to include entrance to all panels. Nowadays, if you have a celebrity run panel or a guest run panel, that's not even included in your badge price. You have to pay extra
You
to
sometimes
go
have to
to
pay
that panel.
extra.
And sometimes that's not a nominal fee. This is not like $5 or $10. Some of those panels can be $50, $60 to get in. And even then,
It's wild.
It's not like you're guaranteed to sit in the front row. Like, you may have to stand at the back for that $50 or $60.
It's consumerism at its finest. Yay! Again,
Well, let's talk about panels.
yeah, let's talk about panels. So I think this is a mixed bag here because we have talked about this loads of times, how we've seen panels have shifted, and a lot of that shift has been towards making it 101 content, 102 content, basic things. And I think it really depends on the convention because I have seen some conventions where they are doing a lot more variety of content because I've seen people mention, oh, my con does this, this, and this, or they've brought back cosplay chess or they're doing this. And I'm like, that's cool. I would just say from my personal experience and what I have seen, I have not really seen a lot of experience or advanced content. It seems to be very much relying on 101 content. Not to say that 101 content is bad, it's necessary. We just want to see more variety. That's all.
And if you're going to do 101 content and it's for a topic where there have been 101 panels extensively before now, please consider trying to incorporate a different take on that topic. So just cover it from a different perspective or have slightly different things that you cover in your panel to differentiate you from all of the dozens of other 101 panels that are on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Because generally speaking, they're recorded. They're on YouTube. People can go watch them. We want people to watch your panel. And so anything that you can do to kind of help break out from the pack is really helpful.
Yeah, I've had a couple of people ask me within the last couple of years as they want to get into paneling, like, what could they do? What could they teach? They think about doing a 101 panel. And I said, what is something that you really love to do in cosplay? Make that your panel focus because you're going to be passionate about the topic and you already know a lot. So it's just going to flow naturally from you. Don't worry about, well, is this too easy, too hard? Focus on the thing that you really, really love. And then other people will join in and absolutely resonate with the fact that you love the thing.
Some people may not know that that's their thing until you show them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then all of a sudden, you have a community.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
One of the negative changes, unfortunately, with panels is that cons no longer comp you if you are a panelist as much as they used to.
That angers me on so many levels because we're giving them content that we spend months and months preparing for. And the compensation for it is getting to be next to nothing, or you have to put in like 10 hours of work before you get half a badge. Not even the full badge, half a badge.
It used to be that even offering one or two panels would get you a weekend badge.
Mm-hmm.
And a certain amount of volunteering, which panels are included in that, would get you a hotel room as part of staff. And nowadays, sometimes all you get is just a thanks. You don't even get a free badge for a day. You have to still pay for your badge in addition to providing your panel content. And so there is a lot less incentive now for people to provide panels at conventions if there is insufficient compensation to make it worth the amount of effort that it takes for them to make said panel, especially if you are producing multiple panels.
Yep.
Or if you are producing a very large panel, like say a workshop that is multiple hours or a cosplay contest or things like that, that take like multiple hours worth of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're providing any type of content to a convention, you need to be compensated in some way. What you decide that compensation is totally up to you, but you shouldn't be working for free.
Something else that I kind of miss from before COVID, it's done a bit less now, is that conventions used to come out with their panel schedules pretty early. You get them like 4 to 6 weeks early before the con.
I am so annoyed that conventions don't do this anymore. They're popping them like a couple of days before the event. I'm like, I am a planner through and through. You can't just drop a schedule on me 2 days before the event and expect me to be happy about it. Like, you got to give me multiple weeks of heads up. I understand that things may change. I get that. But for the love of crap, give me a schedule in a reasonable time frame. Oh my God.
And as attendees, we realize, like, it comes baked in that the schedule may change at any moment, including at the con itself.
Yeah.
We know stuff happens. We know guests cancel. We know panelists cancel. We know stuff has to be moved, et cetera, et cetera,
et cetera.
Please do not use that as an excuse to not publish what schedule you have, because we already take that into account and still like to be able to see what is available to us at the con in terms of content, in terms of guest panels, in terms of the contests and workshops and things, especially if said things require sign up in advance. So you kind of have to know where it is on the schedule. So I know, can I attend this? Especially if you're a panelist, because if you're presenting, then you have to know if other thing you want to do interferes with your panel time. And so schedule being out far in advance, at least as much as you can reasonably give it, is very helpful. And nowadays, you're kind of lucky if you get it a month in advance. I mean, that's really lucky.
That's really
Most
lucky.
conventions, it's more like 2 weeks before the con,
You're
which
lucky.
is, especially in the era of longer cons, is really not much.
And we're panel people. We love panels. I will go to a convention if I see a couple of panels that I really want to attend, but I'm not going to buy that pass unless I see your schedule. So the longer you wait, the less likely I'm going to get that pass. And especially if it's going to be in 2 days, I'm definitely not buying that pass.
And it's good to kind of help support your panelists and market them. We've talked about this previously in an episode, so I won't go too much into it, but just to say that sometimes people may not know that a panel is happening or know what it's about. And so if you can give them a little boost, maybe publish it on your website or on your social media and shine a spotlight on said panel, that way more people know about it and may plan to attend, in which case you have more attendees.
All right, do we want to go into our big topic, which is cosplay, because we know so much about cosplay?
Oh, the cosplay. This could probably be an entire episode on its own.
It really could. It really could, because my little notes I wrote down, I'm like, oh gosh, we could talk about this for another hour, but we're not going to. We're going to try to keep it as short and sweet as possible, but we're still going to talk about it. So, what has changed in cosplay since 2020 when it comes to conventions? The big thing that I have personally noticed, and this is an anecdote that I've heard very recently a lot more from my friends, and not just here, but around the country, is that cosplay gatherings are not what they used to be. They're not the same. What they started out as was to be a very social engagement. You showed up because other people liked the thing that you were cosplaying from, and it was a great way to kind of form bonds, make friends, have camaraderie, and take some silly pictures together. And now it is very much focused on you show up to get your photo taken, and then you go off and do something else. There's a huge lack of communication amongst anybody there other than with the photographer to take the photos, and that's about it. And that really hurt me in so many ways. I'm not a social person by nature. For me, having those gatherings was a great way to help break me out of my shell and interact with people on something that we already had common ground. It's like, oh, we like the fandom of this same thing. Let us have a chat. And it made it so much easier for me to make friends that way. And to see that social element gone really hurts.
Speaking of cosplay photos, a positive change that I have seen since COVID is that there are a lot more places now that have official cosplay photo shoot areas where they will provide backdrops, they will provide props. There is a specific place that is designated for these. Sometimes they'll even provide cameras for you so that they'll take pictures of you. But it's a very formalized thing now where you can go and get some pretty darn nice pictures taken with some very nice backdrops and props of your costume for free most of the time. They don't charge, or sometimes they'll have like a donation bucket so that they can offset the price of making the backdrops and the props and all that stuff. But, bless the groups that are offering this as a service now because it's actually really cool.
I think as they got really, really big with Anime Expo, I remember many, many years ago, and as they've been kind of expanding to other events, and I'm seeing them more often. It's so nice. It's so nice to actually be finally recognized. Like, yes, we want nice, proper, fun backdrops to take our photos in instead of the gray concrete walls of the convention center with the fluorescent lighting that makes us all look disgusting. I do love those backdrops so much. Even the branded backdrops, it's better than nothing. At least gives us options.
I would hope that cosplay contests had changed more than they have, but
Yeah, it's a
they've
question
gotten
mark.
longer. They've gotten a lot longer than they used to be. Now cosplay contests are an entire day-long commitment, sometimes multi-day-long
Multi-day
commitments.
commitments. It's basically your entire weekend in some places, and that just aggravates me to no end.
You basically have to give up your con if you want to compete. Because you have to go through craftsmanship judging, and then you have to go through rehearsal, and then you basically have a giant waiting period while everybody is loading into the amphitheater, and then you have the cosplay contest itself, and you have a halftime show, and you have all these other things, and you're just exhausted at the end of that. Not to mention that you can't attend other panels because they don't allow you to leave once you're there. You can't, like, go out and get food to eat. which is also kind of a problem. Not to mention that just being in costume for that long just kind of takes a toll on your body. And so it would be nice if they could be a little more efficient with their cosplay contests, just a little.
I think from what I've seen, the more established conventions seem to be better about addressing basic human needs, making sure that there are chairs, there's water, there's snacks, there's appropriate amount of breaks for people, letting people take breaks. Thank you for that. And it also depends on who is managing the department. If you're having somebody with contest experience, you're going to have a better time overall because they're going to be fully aware. Yes, we need to do XYZ because these are human beings. They need these things. Let's be kind to them. Whereas if you have somebody from security who's running the contest, they're not going to quite understand the process and how things are supposed to work out. I have also noticed that with the larger conventions, they're better about the prizes that are being offered. Whether it's like sewing machines or cash prizes or, a trip to another convention. Sometimes it's a trip to compete at another convention, which initially I was like, well, that could be kind of cool. But then there's another part of me that goes, oh, so I have to go to another con and spend the whole weekend competing and not enjoying the convention. I don't know if I like that. It depends on the type of person that you are. That's your choice. Whereas if it's a younger convention, they're not aware that prizes are necessary. We gotta give the cosplayer something for their time, their energy to be here, and dealer's room leftovers are making a comeback. And I'm like, that's not appropriate. That is not okay. People are not cosplaying on a stage for dealer's room leftovers. They want their time to be worth it. So it's a toss-up. I think they're better in some places, but then they have not changed or they've gotten worse in others. It's kind of equaled out in a weird way.
Yeah, the two last things I would briefly say about this topic is that one, kind of like we talked about the guest situation earlier, I would very much like for conventions to not keep using the same judges for their cosplay
Yes,
contest every year.
yes.
You have so many cosplayers to choose from, including previous winners of your own contest. Please utilize that pool so that you get a larger breadth of judges at your contest. Plus, it helps with allegations of like favoritism and bias and that sort of thing, which are always going around in the community. So that's one. The other is that people seem to be much more apt now with cosplay to arrange for formal pictures of their cosplay. It used to be when, at least when I first started at cons, back in the day, people were a lot happier or just more willing to get cell phone pictures, like pictures in the cosplay hall, in the dealer's den, wherever, just very casual pictures. But nowadays, it seems there are a lot more photographers offering like formal packages or areas where you can get like a nice photography background and get nice formalized pictures of your cosplay. And that seems to have like accelerated as a change since COVID. A lot more people are kind of going that direction.
Yeah, one positive that I definitely want to add out there is the range and variety of costumes that have made it onto the scene is astounding. I am constantly impressed at the skill level of cosplayers. It continues to improve. Not even year over year, week over week, day over day. It's incredible the things that people are producing, even first-time cosplayers. Half the time I'm just tilting my head and going, how did you make that? And how is this your first costume? There is no way this is your first costume. How did you do this? It is remarkable what people can come up with. And it just makes me so happy to see that people care about the craft that much, that they want to learn, that they want to grow. And it's so exciting to see those costumes every single time. It makes me so happy.
All right, and then our final topic, atmosphere.
The atmosphere of conventions, what has changed with them? And I would say it feels very different from how it used to be. And this may be old lady yelling at clouds moment, but it's not the same. It's so different. It feels like it was more innocent back then. And I say this knowing full well that fan conventions have always had a profit motivation. I don't want it to like sugarcoat it and be like, oh, fan conventions were never about money. They were just doing it for the fun. No, everybody wants to make money. Let's be real here. But it feels like the need for profit has taken a front seat. there is very clear profit motivation at the forefront from the moment you go to the website and you see that the tickets are $110 for 2 days. Whereas back then, it really felt like we're here to bring multiple fandoms together and just have a weekend of fun, have a weekend away from the normal grind of life, school, work, family, what have you, to just be goobers for 3 days. And chill out and show our love for a fandom and geeky things that we normally would have been made fun of. And yeah, you still had to pay money for it, but there was a camaraderie about it that I just don't feel like is there anymore. Now it just feels like I am an attendee who is there to spend money on merchandise and then leave. The interactive element that I used to have just isn't there anymore, and it makes it less fun.
To me, it also feels a bit more chaotic
yes.
than it used to.
Yes.
Whereas previously, conventions were very orderly. They were very planned. Everyone had the information that they needed. Nowadays, it's a little bit more vibey, if I can say that, where it's more ad hoc, kind of go with the flow. It's a lot less orderly for cons. And as somebody who really prefers the orderly, it makes it a little bit more anxiety inducing for me. But also, it feels like cons are trying so hard to pack as much as possible into a small time slot that it feels like you're constantly being rushed from thing to thing to thing. There are no scheduled breaks. There are no rooms set up for people to take a break. There's just everything is push, 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 push constantly to the next thing. Like, go purchase the next thing, go to the next panel, go to the next workshop, move, basically. And there's much less of that vibe of just casual, relaxed fandom where you breathe and you have a chance to socialize with people that is not under pressure. Like, oh, there's another group coming in, you're going to have to move in 15 minutes kind of thing. And you have a chance to just enjoy the con and the pulse of the con. Now it just all feels a lot more, so not only chaotic, but like fast chaos. And that kind of goes along with the whole, like, not releasing the schedule until the last minute. It's like, everything is done last minute now. Please plan out your con.
Why don't you have the con planned out? Yeah, it actually makes me more nervous to want to go to an event when things don't feel like they're planned out, when it feels like we're just throwing everything at you at the last minute. I'm like, you guys have had probably a year plus of planning. Why are you just now informing us of this? I don't know if I like this. I don't like this. Part of the vibe thing too is I feel like, especially at anime conventions, that there's now this level of elitism, which probably sounds kind of weird. But what I mean by that is it seems like if you haven't watched ABC anime, everybody judges you. And it's such a weird feeling to be in that space now and go, but wait, anime is all valid. Comic books are all valid. Why does it matter which ones we've read or which ones we've watched or, you know, all of this? Why does that matter? It shouldn't matter. But it seems to now matter to some people, and these are the people who are now making decisions. And so it's just kind of making it an unfriendly, unwelcoming place. And I wish I could extrapolate more on this. I tried really hard to think of the words to convey what I mean by this, but there's just something about when you're in that space and you're around people and you're like, I don't feel like I belong here and that I'm being judged because I didn't watch ABC anime. It's really, really strange. And I don't like that feeling when this should be a space that is inclusive of everybody, regardless of where you are in your anime, comic book, video game journey.
The last thing I would say about atmosphere is that probably the biggest change I've noticed since COVID, and you can think of this as good or bad, it's totally up to you, but it seems like conventions, like the atmosphere, the vibe of conventions is now being set more by committee
yes.
than listening to the feedback of attendees.
I agree.
It's less about what do the attendees want out of the con? What makes them happy? What makes the fandom burn with passion? Like, what does the community want their con to be? And it seems more like it's being decided for the community on behalf of the community saying, well, they're going to like this. We're going to do it like this because it's going to bring in more ticket sales. And it feels like our voice is being heard less and less, and that it's a small group of people that is making those decisions for everyone. And there may be some attendees, or there may be some longtime congoers on that committee, but they are not speaking on behalf of the community. Like, we did not necessarily give them that permission or authority, especially because the community is so diverse. It one person can't really speak for the whole community. And it feels like cons less and less are taking that feedback into account and then turning around and doing something with it.
I
So that's
agree.
where I would end.
I agree with that. For me, I think I would end it on bring back hotel cons. I miss hotel cons. And when I say hotel cons, the vibe on those was it felt so much more together. It felt more smaller, inclusive. You know, you could get up at 3 a.m., go to the lobby, and there would be people playing Pokemon card games or something. You know, you could do something during those 3 days at any hour of the day, something was going on. But now that so many conventions have moved more towards the convention center format where content ends at 7 o'clock because that's when the convention closes, you lose so much of that interactive element. And while I may be an old lady who does not stay up until 3 a.m., knowing that I could potentially, you know, get up and go do something at 3 a.m. was always a nice feeling.
And of course, we've also had a ton of chatter in our live
Yes.
chat. So thank you very much, chatters, for also chiming in with your thoughts as we've gone through these topics. But of course, for those of you who are watching this as a recording, we would also love to hear your thoughts about all these different topics that we talked about. Please feel free to join in the conversation via any of our social media, which of course you can find here.
Everything is located underneath Amber on the left-hand side if you are watching this episode on YouTube. Thank you for supporting us on YouTube. For those of us who are listening, you can visit us at cospod.org on Facebook and Instagram at Cosplay Podcast, on YouTube as CosPodcast, and on Blue Sky as CosPod.
Or if you prefer not to use social media, you can, of course, email us, podcast@cospod.org, where you will get an answer from each one of us, along with Nick Cage memes,
Yay!
which is something that has not changed since COVID. Otherwise, please stay safe, stay healthy out there, keep working on all of those amazing cosplays so that we can all see your smiling, shining faces at a convention local to us ASAP, or even at World Cosplay Summit here in a couple of weeks. Otherwise, we will see you all next time in episode 318. Happy cosplaying, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.